Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Many, many years ago, during a technology presentation at my then time employer, Harman, we presented the latest version of a car radio. And we were super proud on the HMI. And we got a couple of patents on some details of the HMI, the human-machine interface. And then some colleague from the technology side came and he looked at it and he found it great that we combined all the technologies. And then I tried to focus him towards the HMI, because that was my work, the work of my team. My people had put a lot of effort into this. And he replied, the HMI is not really important. In the end, you just need to have to agree on one. And this sentence stuck to me, and this came back to me in the past many, many times. In many companies, usability is still considered a luxury. User experience is still considered a luxury. That's something you do if there is some budget left at the end of the development. First technology, then functions, then marketing. And then at some point, very often at the very end, someone asks the question, is this actually usable? And this is exactly where one of the biggest economic misconceptions in technology lies. Because usability does not cost money. Poor usability costs money. And this sentence summarizes basically the entire podcast. So if you don't have any time, you can stop now. Just remember, because usability does not cost money, poor usability costs money. I recommend to stay on and follow me through the next 30-35 minutes, because I get into a lot more details. Products that are difficult to use generate support costs. They require training. They create frustration among users. Now, one example, a big business software company here out of southwestern Germany. Almost every company on the globe works with their software, and it is super hard to use. It is almost impossible to use this. And I met the usability guys of this company and I approached them. And I know that was not very nice, but I said, hey, guys, what are you doing? What are you doing? Because the usability of this software is so poor. Are you trying to sell additional trainings with that? And they were just, no, we're doing an excellent job. And of course, I was not very nice in this moment, but I had my bad experiences with this. Good usability works. Good user experience, positive user experience works in exactly the opposite direction. Products that function intuitively require less support. They can be learned more quickly. They are used more often and they create satisfaction and with that loyalty. In short, usability is not a design topic. User experience is not a design topic. Usability and UX are business topics. For more than three decades, I've been working on human technology interaction. Again and again, I see the same pattern. I still see it today, and this is what I'm talking about this today. The most successful products are rarely those with the most features, with the most advanced technologies. The most successful products are the ones that users truly understand and enjoy using. Companies invest millions in technology development. A comparatively small part of that goes into usability and into user experience. But this part often determines whether an innovation succeeds in the market. The return on investment of usability and user experience is real. Not as some kind of abstract design quality, but very concretely. Lower support costs, faster onboarding, higher productivity, stronger customer loyalty, better market acceptance. Or simply, usability and user experience make money. Not immediately visible in the balance sheet, but clearly in the long-term success of a product, and with that, a company. Perhaps the industry should therefore stop asking, can we afford usability? The better question is, can we afford to do it without usability? In this episode of the Human Technology Podcast, we'll discuss three topics. And first, I will make an analysis of the ROI of usability. What is it? How can it be measured? Where does it arise? Why is it so difficult to communicate? And I believe that this is the major point. Second topic are three examples where UX usability contributed to the success of a product. And number three, the opposite, three examples where things went wrong because users were not in focus. Let's start with the ROI of usability. An analysis in 6 points I have. Point number one, usability is perceived as a cost block. This is the fundamental problem. In many companies, usability or user experience is organizationally misclassified. Typical perceptions, it's a design topic, it's a nice to have, it's marketing, it's cosmetics, something for the final phase of the product. The UX guy Alan Cooper wrote about putting lipstick on pigs. That meaning that you create a product, a technology, and then you put it on all functions. And at the very end, someone pops up, we need usability. Where are the usability guys? Add some usability to that. Add some user experience. Yeah. And this is definitely the wrong approach. You have to be user-centric from the very beginning to create a successful product. And as a result of today's thinking, and I see it's not as strong as it was 20 years ago, but it's still there. And as a result of this thinking, usability, user experience are not seen as a value driver, but as a cost center. And this leads to three typical management decisions. UX is integrated late into the project. UX is underfunded, and UX is cut when budgets are tight. The fundamental misconception in this one is usability does not only affect the interface. It affects the entire economic viability of a product. Number two of the six points I'm having here on the ROI on usability, where the ROI, the return on invest, of usability actually arises. The economic benefit arises in several places at the same time. Number one, reduced development cost. The greatest leverage arises early in the development process. Studies of, for example, IBM design research show changes in the concept phase are up to 100 times cheaper than short before market launch or even after market launch. So if you do it right in the early phases, you save a lot of money. Usability reduces cost through fewer redesigns, fewer development mistakes, clearer requirements, better prioritization, prioritization of functions, prioritization of interactions, and user experience prevents misdevelopment. You don't do the wrong things, or you reduce the chance of doing the wrong things in a product if you have a user-centric design process, if you have the user in mind all the time. Lower support costs. Poor usability generates massive follow-up costs. Support requests, operating errors, training requirements, documentation efforts. One example out of a study from the Nielsen Norman Group, a usability user experience powerhouse. In many software products, 50% of all support requests arises from poor usability. There is an example of the antivirus software McAfee. I don't know whether anyone still knows this today. It was very popular 20, 25 years ago. And McAfee had a very poor HMI. And when they redesigned the HMI, made it easier to use, they reduced the call center calls by, I think, 80%. Yeah, they cut the costs of support, the support cost, by 80%. So as a consequence, better usability reduces call center cost, service cost, training effort, documentation effort. If a product is self-descriptive, you don't need all the support. Next point, higher productivity. This effect is enormous, especially for professional tools. I'm not talking about some kind of dating app or something. Yeah, but let's talk about industrial equipment, machine control systems, professional software, medical devices, kitchen or gastronomy equipment. Yeah? Stuff that is standing and used in restaurants. In these environments, a better design interface can reduce interaction times, reduce errors, accelerate processes, and productivity increases by 10 to 14%, according to Nielsen Norman. And this is direct economic value that we produce with good usability and positive user experiences. Next point, higher acceptance of new technologies. Many innovations don't fail because of the technology. They fail because people, users, do not understand them. Yeah, some examples from industry, the ERP systems, industrial software, smart home software, some of the automotive functions that we have seen. Usability acts as an adoption accelerator in this context. And a product that is easy to understand will be adopted faster, used more intensively, and will be rejected less often. Another result why ROI of usability is important are higher sales. Yeah? Usability plays a massive role, particularly in the B2C market. Let's take the example of web shops. Even small improvements in usability can significantly increase conversion rates, reduce purchasing abandonment. So that there is a study from Forrester Research showing that improvements only in the checkout process can increase conversion rates by 10 to 35%. I had the example many times, and still every now and then this happens, that I order something online in the US and they have a checkout that is for US market address formats, phone number formats, for the US version only. So you have to put in a state, for example. In Germany, we don't have the states in the states in the address, and the state of Baden-Württemberg, where I live in, is not in the list of US states because it is not a US state. Yeah. So That makes it very difficult. And every now and then I had to stop a purchase. I was final on the decision. I wanted to buy something and I was ready to pay it. And then I had to type in my address because of this wrong address format. I just didn't buy it and they didn't make any revenue with me. This is a typical thing that happens very often. If you do it the wrong way, you lose the customer, and with that, a lot of revenue. Okay, number three we're talking about here on the ROI of usability. The most important one is market success. The biggest effect is very difficult to measure, but it is absolutely real. Usability and user experience determine whether people like a product, whether they recommend it, whether they buy it again. Yeah, the marketing between users saying, hey, recommendation marketing, I have used this product and it's so super cool, you should get it. That is far more valuable than every TV commercial or internet ad or whatever. You get more value out of that. Rebuying. If users are satisfied with a product, they will buy it again. Or the follow-up, or the next version, or something of this company. And all this has effects on brand image, on customer satisfaction, on loyalty. And many successful products owe their success precisely to this factor. For example, Amazon. For example, Apple. Apple is a world champion of tying people to the brand, because they deliver ease of use, fun of use, user experience, a positive brand image. And pretty much the same with Tesla. If you have an objective look at Tesla, the cars are not that good. Yeah, maybe they've been okay-ish when they were new. Now they're a little outdated. Yeah, there are no follow-ups. There is no updates of the cars. So it's not a recall, but people still believe in Tesla. They still believe that Tesla is a great car, and this is an image. Yeah? Objectively, as a car guy, I can tell you, it's not a very good car. No? It's all image. And world champion in branding, from my point of view, is Harley Davidson. These motorbikes, of course, they're cool, they're great to ride, and I have one. They make more revenue with merchandise than with a bike, is what I've heard. If you prove me wrong, okay, but I believe this. That with all the t-shirts and the helmets and the jackets and the boots and the gloves and the stickers and everything that they buy in addition to the motorbikes, they make more money than with the bike itself. That cumulates in the statement of Harley Davidson, we are selling a lifestyle. The bike is free. And this is exactly the point here. And this is how it works when usability, user experience, particularly its user experience in the case of Apple, Tesla, and Harley Davidson, when that is a good one. So technology alone is not the differentiating factor. It is the user experience. Point number four out of the six, why ROI of usability is important. Why the ROI is often underestimated. Why? Very often managers, top managers, technology guys believe, oh, that's not so important. The major reason lies in management thinking. The ROI is distributed. Usability affects at the same time development, support, sales, marketing, usage. Yeah? There are guys developing this one. And if you have a smooth, straight user-focused development process, the process itself will be smoother and easier. One of my guys, my technology friends at Harman, said to me, "I have more than enough problems. So please don't fiddle around with the HMI." It's exactly the opposite. If the HMI guys are in the focus, in the core, in the beginning, in the starting point of a development, you have an easier development process because the technology guys can focus on what they are best in, writing codes, creating hardware, flashing software. That's what they're great in. But they can, the design guys, the HMI, the UX guys, they are focusing what they are best in. And if you start with that, then you have an easier development. Lower support costs, totally different department. You know, these people usually don't talk to each other. You got these silos in company and the support people are running the aftermarket support. They don't talk to the developers too much. Yeah, same with sales and marketing. And then you have the user at the very end, where ROI, return on invest, is produced. But very often, the connection to the user, the connect, is low. So the benefits do not belong to one single department within the company, is one single silo. There's no one promoting that one because it doesn't really belong to just one of them. Second point why ROI of usability is very often underestimated. The ROI is indirect. So the effect often appears as avoided costs and avoided problems, and you don't see that. If you have additional costs, you see it right away. If you have to spend another 100,000 euros, dollars, pounds into a design, usability, user experience development, that's what you see. What you do not see is the cost you avoid when you don't do this, or the cost you gain if you don't do it. So you avoid this, yeah? This just with the same thing of problem. If you do it right and you spend the money, you avoid problems and you avoid costs. And this is not visible. You only see what you spend. You do not see what you get back because it is not existing. And these effects are harder to measure than sheer revenue or unit sales. That's easy to measure, but things, the value of problems you don't have, that is hard to measure, hard to communicate. And the ROI of usability works long term. Many effects arise only after market launch. Lower service costs, higher customer satisfaction, repeated purchases, customer loyalty. Yeah, this is all long-term. Thinking in companies is very often short-term. It's a short-term budget. We have to fit this quarter. Yeah, and this short-term budget logic does not recognize this long-term value. And this then, at the very end, creates the problems. Number five, typical ROI figures from the different studies that I have seen. Several studies have attempted to quantify ROI. So every dollar invested in UX returns $2 to $100, according to Forrester Research, one of these big research companies. So $1 invested in UX returns between $2 and $100. An often used rule of thumb is the ROI of usable UX is 9,900%. Sounds enormous. But whether it's exactly this number or whether it's any other number, the message is you get this, and this is money, and research shows this, and it's serious guys doing this. More important than the exact number, whether it is $2, $50, or $100 you get back for a single dollar invested, the ROI of usability is, in most cases, exceptionally high. Number six out of 6 points why ROI of usability is important. It's the management message. The decisive point is a change of perspective. The wrong question is, what does usability cost? The right question is, what does poor usability cost? Because poor usability leads to misdevelopments, support costs, frustrations, market failures, lost in trust, user trust, lost in brand value. All this is connected to this. And so we should not focus on the cost of usability, but on the cost of poor usability and poor user experience. All right, so far on the background of what ROI of usability is, three positive examples. Number one I would like to talk about is the very first Apple iPhone. The iPhone was introduced in 2007. The underlying technology was definitely not new. At that time, it was a mediocre quality phone with mediocre battery lifetime, mediocre connection qualities. So it was not pretty cool. And smartphones had already existed for many years. Devices from Nokia. The Nokia, some of you may remember the name, it's a Finnish company, and they owned in the 90s and 2000s about 40% of the market, up to 40%. So they were dominating the market, and they had this. And I had one of these early Nokia devices with a keyboard you could flip out. So pretty cool thing, but yeah, that was the beginning. That was the BlackBerry, the business smartphone BlackBerry, yeah, with a mechanical keyboard below a screen, which was not a touch screen in the early versions, but there was a rotary wheel on the side, hard to use. Yeah, the keyboard was pretty good, but the rest was mediocre at best. And then there were a couple of devices with Windows Mobile, but they never really gained any market share. However, these devices had a fundamental problem. They were difficult to use. Yeah, small physical keyboards, complex menu structures, nested functions, stylus operation, and this scroll wheel on the BlackBerry I talked about was not easy. So they were more like mini computers for experts. And Apple, with the first iPhone, solved this problem radically through a new interaction design, new interaction paradigms. Yeah, so the key UX innovation were a touchscreen. So the front side was fully covered with a touchscreen. Yeah, and there's multi-touch interaction, the pinch to zoom, the swiping, all these interaction paradigms we use totally naturally, and they're totally present in our everyday interaction with the smartphones. They were invented, or maybe not initially invented, but they were made public, invented to a larger user group, with the first iPhone. Yeah, this direct manipulation of objects, this physical reduction, yeah, of buttons and things. Yeah, there's only one single central home button and a couple of hard keys on the edge. That's all. And then everything else is focused on the touchscreen. Yeah, the visual metaphors they were using, the icons, the physical animations they had, this response to gestures. Yeah, and Apple followed a very simple principle. The interface behaves the way people intuitively expect it to him. And the result was dramatic. The smartphone changed from a niche product for business users to an everyday device for billions of people. Latest numbers I have read somewhere are that the number of smartphones and the number of humans are equal. On the other side, only a small portion of humans has access to toilets. And toilets were invented in the Babylonian age, 2,000 years before Christ, 4,000 years ago. Yeah, and the smartphone was invented 20 years ago. See the difference. And the economic effect is Apple became one of the most valuable companies in the world. The smartphone became the dominant computing device of our time. And the decisive innovation was not the technology. It was the interaction, the HMI, the human-machine interface, the usability, the user experience. Number two of the positive examples, Amazon. The Amazon One Click in particular. In e-commerce, there is always a fundamental user experience problem. So every additional step reduces the probability of purchase. The more steps I have, the more people I have that I just get out of the process. Before the introduction of this one click, the typical online purchasing process consisted of select a product, opening a shopping cart, enter an address, enter payment details, confirm the order, and then, yeah, you had your order done. And this long process with the many different steps created what is known as a checkout friction. Yeah, many users abandon the purchase at this stage because they say they cannot follow it. Like the example I talked about a couple of minutes ago, when I cannot put in a German phone number, or when they require me to put in a state of the US when I want to have it sent to Germany. And Amazon developed a radical user experience focused solution, the one-click purchase. The principle was simple. Address and payment data are stored. You put it in once. And then one click is enough. The order is triggered, executed immediately. And the idea is, behind this, friction kills conversion. And the less friction you have in a process, the more often it is executed. And the economic effect was enormous. Jeff Bezos is one of the richest guys in the world. Amazon is one of the biggest companies in the world. And from my point of view, an essential part of that is this one-click order you have. Yeah, because this one-click led to significantly higher conversion rates, spontaneous purchases. I have some like 250 unread books on my Kindle ebook reader just because it's so easy to order it. Yeah. Oh, cool book. Come on, click on it. And that's it. Purchase done. Revenue made. Yeah, it creates a higher revenue per customer. And Amazon patented this process, licensed it to Apple and other companies. And this example shows very clearly user experience, usability, a good HMI has a direct impact on sales, on revenue. Number three of the positive examples, TomTom. TomTom as an example of PNDs, personal navigation devices, these little devices we had in the 2000s that you had a cradle, a holder, yeah, you plugged that into someone on your dashboard or to your windscreen, and then you had a little navigation device. That was the time before all of us had Google Maps, Apple Maps, OpenStreetMaps, whatever apps on our smartphones. That was basically, for those who don't know this, a smartphone without a smartphone, only a navigation app on it. And we had this at Becker as well, the Harman, we had this at Harman as well, with the Becker brand PNDs. But TomTom were the first ones, and TomTom was an expression after a while for all mobile navigation devices. Yeah, so people ask me, oh, you are producing TomToms as well. No, I'm not producing a TomTom. I'm producing a Becker PND. But that was the name that was used, particularly in the US, but also in other companies, that TomTom was not a brand name anymore. It was a category name. Yeah, the product category, personal navigation device, carried the name TomTom. And that's why I'm using it here. Navigation technology existed long before TomTom. Now, professional navigation systems, military GPS applications, early in-car navigation systems. I remember when I had my first in-car navigation in the late 90s in a Mercedes, when I was at Mercedes in one of the test cars we had, and it was awful under every aspect. It was hard to use. It was wrong. It told me the wrong things. It located me in the wrong position. It had only a small termite turn screen. So it was highly expensive, but not at all useful. The user experience was negative. So these systems, they were expensive, they were complicated, they were difficult to use. And for a long time, navigation was an expert tool. And TomTom changed this through a radical user experience simplification with clear map visualization, large displays, clear route guidance, simple interactions, easy to enter addresses, then start the route, the voice guidance they had, the turn-by-turn navigation arrows. Yeah, so it was a dedicated device ready to use immediately without any big installations, no antennas, no. Yeah, all you needed to do is put the cradle somewhere on the dashboard, plug the device in, maybe you need some power supply, and that's it. It just works. And this way, navigation became an everyday tool for millions of drivers for the first time. And TomTom temporarily dominated the market of these portable navigation devices in the 2000s. What I wanted to show is new technology only becomes successful when it is easy to understand, when it's trustworthy to operate. And all the three examples I mentioned here, Amazon, the Apple iPhone, and the TomToms, they follow the same principles. Technology does not become successful because it exists. Technology becomes successful because people understand it and want to use it. Or even more focused, the economic success of technology is not decided in the development. It is decided in the interaction, in the HMI, in the usability, in the user experience. All right, where there is light, there is dark. Where there is sun, there is shade. Three negative examples where I believe that there was a missing user focus that led to poor user experience. The first is the humane AI pin. It was introduced in 2023, and it was intended to enable a completely new way of human-technology interaction. It was a small device that was attached magnetically somewhere to your clothing. You had a voice interaction, you had some gestures, and a laser projection that displays information in the palm of your hand. That was the idea behind this. And the message was AI takes over many tasks of the smartphone, and this pin will replace the smartphone. And the vision was radical. Yeah, the first post-smartphone device we had. The interaction, the interface, consisted of three elements. So it was a voice interaction. So the user speaks into the device. For example, asking questions, dictating messages, retrieving information. Yeah, that was done. And here you can see already the first negative thing. If I want to scroll through from some spicy content, I can do this on my smartphone without anyone else realizing this. If I say, hey, AI pin, show me some spicy content, then everybody can hear it around me. Yeah? This is not what users will do. Second point, gestures, hand movements to control functions. And then third point was the laser projection. So these things, the voice, the gestures, and the laser, was the HMI of this one. And the information of the laser projector was calls, who's calling, menus, and simple navigation, turn-by-turn navigation onwards. The product failed. And by the way, I could have told you right away, this will never work. Technologically, the device was super interesting. The problem lay almost entirely in the user experience. First of all, the interaction was slower and more complex than with a smartphone. Yeah, many tasks took longer, speaking instead of typing, waiting times for AI response, cumbersome gestures. Man, this contradicts a central UX principle. New interfaces must be faster and better than the old ones. The projections onto the palm of the hand are ergonomically problematic. Yeah, the palm as a display sounds futuristic but has several problems. It's difficult to read in the daylight. It's an unnatural hand posture. Yeah, so it's a classical ergonomic problem. You have to hold your hand in a non-natural posture. And this is why it just doesn't work. Low information density. Yeah, the interface was simply physically, ergonomically uncomfortable. The next problem was the lack of an instant gratification. So smartphones work immediately. Screen activate, information is visible. With the AI pin, the user had to speak, wait, hope that the AI answers correctly, and then have it projected into the palm of the hand. The interaction felt slow and somehow unreliable. Next point, there was a lack of ecosystems. Smartphones offer apps, services, platforms. The AI pin offered only a few functions. Yeah, so the benefit remained limited. And the very last point here, the device costs around $700 plus subscription. And many users ask themselves, why should I replace my smartphone with such a device? It can do less, it's less reliable, it's not as well integrated as my smartphone, but costs more. Yeah, and there was no clear answer by the producer. So the economic result is that after the launch, which was initially hyped, they had very poor reviews in the press, they had very high return rates, they had very low sales figures, and a year and a half later, the product was more or less taken off the market. And this is, for me, one of the best known examples of visionary technology, bad user experience. The second one I'd like to discuss here is the Microsoft Zune. The Zune, I don't know whether anyone remembers this device. I've seen it once or twice somewhere, but it was never really present. The Zune was intended to become a competitor to the iPod, a music playing device, a mobile music device. And the technology was pretty good. Wi-Fi functions, social sharing, large display. The problem was in the experience. It was more complex to operate than the iPod. It had a less intuitive interface and it had a weak ecosystem. So while the iPod offered a seamless overall experience, and so we're here back with Apple, right? The device, the software, the store, the Zune felt like a technical product without a clear user experience strategy. And the market almost completely chose the Apple iPod. And the Zune was stopped a few years after it was introduced in I think it was 2011. Number three, the Google Glasses, the first version. So from a technological point of view, very advanced, pretty visionary. The problems lay in several UX user experience dimensions. So the social usability. People felt observed. When somebody was wearing these glasses, it was just like, oh, are you filming me? Are you streaming me into the internet? So people felt observed, and this led to missing acceptance. The interaction, pretty bulky. The voice interaction, the voice control worked only with a very limited set of vocabularies. The entire operating logic was not really intuitive. And the use cases were missing. So many functions were unclear or unnecessary. So the result, the product generated enormous attention, but hardly any real usage. Yeah, and then the term glass soul became a symbol of social rejection because you're wearing these glasses, you're not part of my community. Footnote here, newer versions of the smart glasses came out, and at the CES, it was a prominent device, was presented by countless manufacturers. Perhaps it will work better on the second attempt. Yeah, I see a couple of use cases, more on the professional environments, less for everyday life. But besides the missing use cases, there are problems with the form factor. They are still bulky. They are still ugly, these glasses, with the entire appearance. The wearing comfort, they're comparably heavy. The battery lifetime is not too long. And still, yeah, it is not really fully developed towards a great user experience. So usability is not a design quality. Usability is an economic infrastructure. And this is the one sentence you should carry out of this podcast episode. Or even more, drilled down to the point, usability is one of the most profitable investment areas of new technology development. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time. Take care and stay healthy.